fine.
So, Paul's relatives in California, I know, would be delighted to hear what people had to say. And what I had thought of for tonight, thank you again to Eric and Nancy for the kindness of having offering their home to us. What I had thought was just for us to basically offer a chance for people to share special memories of Paul in celebration of his life. And I would ask that when you start speaking, you say your name and where you know Paul, where you met Paul and how long ago, even if it's only in a sentence or two. It's helpful for us. Most of the people in the group know each other through the Ridge community, but not everybody knows about the history, even in the Ridge community, about how far you go back with Paul and how you made those connections. So it would be helpful for our family particularly to have you say that. But other than that, I just figure there's a certain organic process here about the people that love my brother being able to celebrate him after his passing.
I don't know if any of you have ever been to a Quaker wedding or a Quaker memorial service, but the way the Quakers do it is they just wait till someone speaks. And so the silences don't have to be uncomfortable. It's when you're ready to speak, someone will speak, and it's okay to have some silent people to gather their thoughts.
I did bring pictures, and I know that a couple people have asked me to speak about the pictures, just because they obviously go back a little bit farther than when he was a professional bridge maestro, as used to refer to himself there. But why don't do people want me to start there? I mean, I could. kind of put together today, somewhat on the spur of the moment. This is a favorite picture that's been circulating in my family since, obviously, since we were very young. And if you see the delight in Paul's face, despite the fact that he, I'm 4 years younger. By the way, just again, my name is Kate Loving, but anyway. He squabbled with me like siblings do, and he also loved me dearly. And that's so much comes through in this photo. These pictures in the next two frames came from a photo album that I found in his apartment on Friday. And these are pictures that he had chosen to hold on to, and probably to scarf out of my mother's collection when he was younger. Pictures of him starting from when he was 3, going up through sitting on his dad's lap about the same age, as a Cub Scout, learning to read, learning to play games with my father when he was, I don't know, that age, probably 7. When he was involved in slot car racing and building his own slot cars. this was when he was maybe 11 to 12, and he left slot car as a hobby for bowling. He was involved with the bowling team. He used to be bowling once or twice a week, and they did pretty well, actually.
I'm sure he did.
He used to tell me a lot of bowling stories. Mm-hmm. Bowling and golf, because he used to
excelled
caddy.
Excelled in anything.
He caddied at golf, he used to tell me.
He actually
got me into golf.
He didn't pick up golf until he was in high school, but then he got pretty devoted to it, and he did work at the country club for quite a while.
Where'd you guys grow up?
We grew up in Ardsley, New York, which is a very small suburb of New York City in Westchester County. It's about 20, 25 minutes north of the city on the Stonewall River Parkway. It's 1 square mile and about 5,000 people when we lived there, just for reference. So people that lived in like the next town over didn't always know where Ardsley was, anyway. This is him with a huge fish, and I think that's hysterical because I think he went fishing maybe twice in his life, but he must have gone with his high school, his best friend from high school. This is a picture of him completely sacked out on our kitchen floor. We lived in a house that had radiant heat from the floor, and he used to get down on the floor to visit with our cat, who I think was a guardian angel for us growing up. And inevitably, he'd start petting the cat would stretch out, so he'd kind of start stretching out, and within 10 minutes, His famous napping ability was in full play from the time he was young. He'd be sound asleep in the middle of the floor, no pillow, no nothing. But this was fairly typical, and my brother was always capable of doing that, but he also, I think, was a... Those were the tender moments of him.
Notice the splaying of the legs.
Yes, that was...
That is very... I can tell
that hasn't... That never changed.
I can tell you, because I've shared hotel rooms with him, right, and I've seen his legs sticking out from the covers. It's exactly... That's exactly it. The legs.
I don't know too many people that fall asleep on a hard floor, but he did it on a regular basis. Anyway.
Do you know how he landed the bridge?
How he got into bridge?
Yeah.
Well, I think you might hear more about that since I found out that Harold taught him.
Oh, you did?
In when he was in high school, but he was involved with playing chess for a time through junior high, and then I think he was in a chess club for a bit, and then he discovered bridge, and he really threw his heart into learning it. He was drawn to the strategic aspect of this game, and I tell you, he was a strategist, as you all know. I can tell those stories about being taught to play games by my older brother, but that'll be another time. I don't want to talk too long. This is...
Kate, you know, Paul played bridge with two U.S. chess champions.
Really?
One of whom was in the room.
All right, now here we go. We have to define that.
Eric.
Okay. Wow. Well,
that's a great picture.
Isn't that lovely?
That's a great picture.
I love this one. This was taken at my mom's house.
I do. I love that picture.
And it was in a moment of relaxation. He normally loathed the camera.
That smile. I always love that smile. I love that picture.
You guys recognize this as a much more recent picture before Paul lost the weight. And here he is, of course, in... competition.
Yeah, that's very typical when he played bridge. He was very intense.
Very intense, very serious.
Yeah, that's Paul at the bridge table.
I don't know where this was taken, but I also found this picture in his apartment.
I don't know. Could I see that?
This is like a central Paul. See the Cheshire?
After the haircut, he's like his haircut.
Sheila, do you know where this was taken?
I don't know. I have to see that. I don't know.
It's at someone's house, I think.
When was this taken? Maybe it's your house. I don't know.
He
was at my house a lot, so I mean, all through the years.
I remember when he did.
I actually don't know when this was taken. Go ahead.
We were in the VFW in Somerville.
I think it's about a couple miles away.
We were playing poker.
I think it's a bridge club.
They had a poker game with all the old vets there and stuff.
It's not worth it.
You have to go up the stairs. It's like a little spouse step case. It's maybe twice the height of this. It's a decent stairway. And I remember he went out to go smoke. So he took a break and he wanted to get some air. And I went out with him. And we walked up the stairs and he got to the top of the stairs and he was like... And he's like, oh, he looks back down the stairs. It's not that much. It's like a flight and a half. And he's like, oh, man, forget this. And that's the last time he smoked a cigarette. He didn't smoke that time. And he went, we went immediately to get the patch or whatever.
That's great.
He didn't take another smoke for a while.
And then he was eating healthy, too. Remember he went through
this? Well, his eating habits were always a little strange.
Yes. Strange, but he wanted to get healthy. I mean, he was really...
Yeah, he got into a health kick.
He
went on the keto diet for a while.
He tried to convince me to take Q10.
And he could tell you all the, like, you know, he would tell you, oh, the fish liver oil. He would tell you each one.
Everything.
Yeah,
I mean, it was amazing. We
have a large carton at home with supplements. Paul would order me these supplements and say, these will save your life.
Right.
So we could play more bridge. You owe me $90.
Right. And that's exactly what he would say. He would do everything for your own benefit.
Yeah.
And rather than say, here, I kind of care about you. Why don't you have these? They're like, I want to prolong your life because I want something from you. I want to play bridge with you. So give me $90 for this, and you'll live an extra 5 years. That's right. Yeah, he was always on that health. After he stopped smoking, he was on that big health cue. We used to go for Chinese food. That was his one splurge on Thursday nights right before we played at the Cavendish when it went to Denham. There's this Chinese food place on the way. And we used to go there, and he's eating Chinese food.
That's
right,
amazing.
The worst
in
thing
itself.
You can eat, but that was his one splurge a week, and mine too. And here he was, he'd whip out documents about now too. Take a look at this, all right? And now, don't you think this is a good idea? And it's some drug or something, like some vitamin or something like that.
That's right.
That's what he would always do. He had that every week.
I found an article on this Q's, and I gave it to him to read. He was,
he believed a lot of things.
I know he did.
He was very smart, but he was in a way he was gullible too.
He was naive.
No
way
he was
naive.
When he went to sleep, did
I even?
Now, did your brother sleep with the light on?
My brother, when he was ready
anywhere.
To sleep, he would sleep
he
anywhere.
No, but did he always leave the light on?
Oh, no.
He
no.
did at my house all the time. Whenever he slept over, he slept with the light on.
He was
on.
Just lazy to turn it to get
that's
the light
on.
That's what I thought maybe he might have stemmed back to sleep.
He would definitely sleep in the dark, but he would fall asleep with the light on a regular basis. Whenever he came and stayed at my house, that would happen on a regular basis. So I just come in and turn the light off.
It was time to sleep, so
but he could fall asleep everywhere. And in the bridge tournament, when he wanted to take a nap
between
sessions, when we drove like for one day, he would go in the corner and just stretch on the floor.
That's
like
right.
on the floor.
Yeah,
people
true.
Walking around, people talking, walking around, and Paul is asleep, just on the floor. It's like was amazing
and
ability.
In
the, in the moment. It's like amazing ability to fall asleep.
You used to sleep on the sofa in the Kennedy Club, right?
Yeah.
So you go to the game, and he was like, had a long day, and he would be there and said, Sheila, is he okay? Maybe something happened to him.
Yeah,
go check on him.
No, he's okay.
He could have no sleep.
Yeah,
and once he sat down at that bridge table and picked up that first hand, forget about it. He was a genius. Right, Sheila? She knows. He was phenomenal.
He had ice in his veins at the bridge table.
He was
absolutely.
He was terrific.
He would, no matter who you were, he would come and cut your throat out.
Yeah,
he was
terrific.
Either side of it.
Yeah, he was
but
terrific.
I want just to say,
and he'd be nice to you.
Terrific, generous person he was.
Yeah,
it's amazing,
true.
But I don't know if people know. When I started playing with him, I was like a total novice. I played bridge maybe for 1 year. And obviously we know all these big players, they will never even look at the person that plays only 1 year. They're just like, who is that?
I remember when you won your first reach.
Well, and I started playing bridge, and I just decided that if I want to get better, I have to play with somebody that's better than me. So somebody was telling me, you see, Paul, he's a very good player. He was winning all the time, and he didn't even know my name. So just telling Kate before I came up to Paul, I don't know, me and my big mouth. And I just say, will you play with me sometimes? He said, what's your name? I said, Sheila. So he said, maybe. And he walked away. And he didn't come back to me in 2 weeks. And I said, I will never ask again. Well, if he wanted to play, it's like with somebody. After 2 weeks, he came up to me and said, I can play with you Monday night. I said, Monday night there is. They canceled my game with somebody else. And that was the beginning.
And the rest is history.
And that's the rest is history. And we started playing but it was funny how it developed, but because we started playing once a week, and he was amazing. He was teaching me everything, and I was like, yes, sir, and yes, sir, because I was just afraid to say a word, because he was so great. And he was amazing. He was never get upset. If you say that you make a mistake and you make a mistake, he will never get upset. Once when I was a novice, he got upset with me because I don't know how much bridge, the family knows, all the other people know that, because I was called for Strino Trump, but I was trying to show how brilliant I am, and I wanted to make five, and I made something totally ridiculous, and I went down two. And he said, it's crazy, Sheila, it's just crazy, you had nine treats. But I tried to make more. I said, no, first of all, you make your contract. Okay. And that's what he's like, he was got upset because I made something totally ridiculous that make no sense, and I went down. But he was amazing.
I don't know, Harold, he yelled at you all the time last year.
Well, Harold started losing his mind, so he started yelling.
You see, when Paul started out, there was a sort of very solid thing. Bridge players will know what this is called. Rough stone, And that's right. So, and that at the time, that's what I was playing. And 35 years later, Paul and I decided to play some. And he's still playing the same thing. I mean, he says, if it was good enough then, it was good enough that way. Every time we play, he said, I have to warn you to the opponents, my partner is a gorilla, and he sometimes loses his mind.
But he had a good heart, too. He really did.
Given the time he was trying to pair us, but I was on the phone all the time, and you said, you're an idiot. You could have
I remember.
Once you remember, I don't know if you remember, we drove to Mark, and Dan, and Paul, and I, we drove to a sectional, I think, in Maine. You remember that? Oh, my God. We drove to the sectional in Maine.
I need to hear more about the story.
No, I can tell you the story. I don't know how you don't remember. You probably don't want to remember. So four of us are driving, and we're playing in Maine, and we're winning the game. And it's like, I don't know. It's maybe I started playing, and you were guys nice. And I don't want to leave because I want to see my name in light. I said, okay, we won. I said, no, I want to see that it says one next to our name because I want to see. So we stayed there till they wrote that we won officially. So we're driving back in Maine, and it was the Red Sox. And Paul, I don't know if you know, Paul was like, he loved sports. He loved the Red Sox, that he loved the Patriots, and they've fallen them here. And it was the Red Sox on the radio. And Mark is sitting with Paul in front seat, and I'm sitting with Dan in the back seat. And I thought, before I became the Red Sox fan, so I didn't really want to listen to that. So I fell asleep, and we're driving to the Mass Turnpike, and it was like nothing, you know, Mass. I mean Main Turnpike, like to get to Massachusetts. After half an hour, I wake up, and we're in the woods. We're driving. No, you two sat in the front. Paul was driving. I said, where are we? I said,
I've gone the wrong way more than once, but not this time.
And I said, let's turn around. I said, we're in the woods. I said, you want to kidnap me? You don't have to. I go voluntarily. You don't have to. So we're driving. We're driving in the woods. I said, where are you going? I said, we'll get eventually to the light. I said, let's turn around. No man will turn around, turn back, right? They will never turn back. They will find their way. And they wouldn't turn back. They would, Paul is driving, and they arguing about the Red Sox. And we eventually, we had to turn back. Eventually, we turned back after like half an hour, and we're in the woods, and we went back. But that was like, so, and then I remember Mark is saying, Eric is in danger. We won. Eric is in danger. I said, he's not in danger. Because Paul and Eric played all the time together. And then I started playing with Paul. So Mark was saying, all right, we've killed Eric. Here is a competition coming up.
Well, they put me on the team. They kicked Kevin off. I remember why they
that
did
had
that too.
Nothing. That had nothing to do with skill. Kevin was and still is a good player, but he was just too much of a
I remember
player,
how I sort of got on the team. I was playing, now I knew who Paul was, but when I was a junior at MIT, I remember there was a hand where I was playing with Tom Thompson. I don't know if you guys remember Tom Thompson, the skinny guy. I don't know where he is nowadays, but we're at the MIT club, and I'm playing a hand, and Paul's sitting on my right, so I'm a little nervous because I know who he is, and I coo him. To make the contract, and he looks at me and he goes, you know, that was really well played. And like a week later, he comes back over to me and he says, I'm free next week if you want to play. And that was you know. So then I started playing with him, and I had no idea really about the team. I knew you guys had your own team, and then you know, like about a year later, after playing with him,
you know,
like twice a week, he says, anyway, we have an offer. I remember
we actually hardly knew who you were. And there had been people had been fighting with Kevin. Maybe I don't know if it was me, if it was you, if it was. But anyway, people had been fighting with Kevin. And
Kevin
Paul says, "You know, I've been playing with this. I've been Kevin's a wonderful guy.
Yeah, but he has like
he's
no self interest.
He changed a lot. Yeah. That's not Kevin. Changed a lot. I play with Kevin once a week. Kevin changed the
in real life and frequently in bridge. He can really be a great guy. It's just that sometimes he just well. Anyway." I mean, it was difficult. So Paul says, you know, there's this kid I've been playing with. He's got a lot of talent. I said, okay, he'll be your partner, not our problem.
And I went over to your house, right? You were there, and all three of you were there. And I'm like, and so you asked me if I want to be in the team, and I was like, oh man, I'm in over my head now.
These guys won the team. Paul and Eric
right,
and Mark and Dan. They were on the team before I started playing, and like before I even knew, and they were doing terrific. And then they had start fighting, you know, like boys, little boys start fighting, not getting along, whatever.
Well, some of us
they needed a woman. They needed a woman to put them together, but not for a while. But they did terrific together. But then the last 10 years, I think, isn't it the last 10 years, Daniel, maybe that we played together with you? 10 years, maybe?
Pretty close, yeah.
To that, Paul and I and Dan and John Malley, and we were playing...
Yeah, you guys had a pretty good run.
We won so many events, and we were doing terrific, yeah.
John or John?
John. Now he's not here. Dan's
when I had stopped playing bridge from 85 to like 93.
Okay.
Really?
Were you stayed out that long?
No, not 93, because you were already playing. You and John were playing regular before I quit, and I quit basically in 94. So you might have, maybe 91 or 92.
I can tell, because I can tell who I was married with.
Well, it was the 93.
Paul loved
to
play with Jill. Sheila loved to play with Jill. So Paul decided, I've got to get Harold and Eric together. So we go on the internet, and we start to play. And I had all these telephone calls coming in. And I also had all my students who were watching us play. And Harry's like, I can't play with you anymore, you're a moron.
Right
on. And then I said that. Jill and I played that time. It's the only time in my life this ever happened.
You said that about, was that you?
We won. And Sheila, this is scary, said to me, you played very well. I may have distracted you because I talk too much.
Oh, God. Someone said that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Sheila Gabay owns the privilege.
I remember another story, though. Wasn't there a time that you went to the Nationals or some regional or something, and you were supposed to play on Paul's team or something, and some guy approached you, some big name came and said, Sheila, we're looking for a fourth for the mixed pairs.
Yeah, you know what?
Grant Bayes comes up to her and says, Sheila, we're looking for a fourth. You have to understand, Paul is telling me this story, all right? Because I couldn't believe it. We're playing Thursday night. He comes back. He says, Eric, I got to tell you this. So Sheila's over here, and Grant Bayes comes up and says to Sheila, Paul said, I wasn't there at the time. She had to come find me afterwards. We need a woman for the mixed teams. What was it? Was like 2,000 or something like that? Or
1,000. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he goes, is 1,000 enough? Meaning we'll pay you $1,000. Is 1,000 enough for one day? Okay. And so, because she has a name, because she's played with Paul, she's won some events, right? So she says, this is all Paul is telling me, that she goes, so she said to the guy, let me go check and I'll go find Paul. And so she goes to look for Paul, finds Paul and says, Paul, I've been offered. But by the time he got back, see, they had found someone. And so the deal was off the table for you.
Oh,
and
so
Paul said to me, Eric, how do I convince her that when someone says you can have $1,000, that
okay.
Sheila, just say yes, and I'll find, Paul said, I'll find something else to do that day. Don't worry about it. He's
said,
like, just
give
take your $1,000.
For me, commitment is commitment.
I know,
but he was like,
Eric, you have to tell me how to tell her. Let me tell her. I need to show her that she can say yes and I'll understand.
She never had children and money, that's why.
Secondary thing. So I went to look for Paul. I said, well, I have a partner. I said, you think he mind? I said, yeah, I have a partner. And I have to play. So by the time, and Paul always come before the game early. He's never late. He always have at least half an hour.
This
is
one
specific
time.
He's not there.
He was not sleeping in the side.
He came like 5 minutes, and I found him and said, Paul, listen, Grant Bayes wants me on his team, and he pays me $1,000 a day this day. And if we qualify, he pays me another $1,000. He said, give me $100, it's enough, and go play. By the time I went back, they found somebody else. I don't believe that you wouldn't do that. I said, well, I have to ask you if you agree to do that. That doesn't look normal to me.
It's a business decision.
One thing you might want to know, this, not to get off the subject of bridge, but Paul came up to me not too long ago before he got sick the second time.
Yeah.
He says, Sandra, do you have the movie Rain Man? So I said, yes, I have. He said, can I borrow it? So he took Rain Man, and I don't know, like several weeks went by, I never got Rain Man back. I didn't care. I figured it's gone.
But,
I don't know. After like 3 months, he comes up to me and he hands me, here's your movie. He says, in a brand new box. Evidently, he must have worn that movie out. He says, I watched it 50 times.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he watched that movie about 50 times. He must have wore off the tape. But he gave me a brand new Rain Man. So he had,
Kay, do you know his favorite singer was Olivia Newton-John?
Oh, yes. I knew
that.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, we all knew that.
He had this T-shirt.
At least 1970.
Shirt in the shirt.
He bought
the tape.
Record.
You more than one.
Well, on eBay, yeah. Yes. He didn't know how to do it, so he said, could you bid for me on eBay on this record? I want to buy it. So I did, and we got
he
it.
He had a t-shirt, too. He was all of the
unopened, whatever record.
He had a picture of Olivia Newton-John on his t-shirt.
One of the things that I did over the weekend after we cleaned out the apartment is there were a lot of DVDs and some videos in his apartment. And I just threw them in boxes. And I was just trying to figure out what was there. But it was an education for me in what Paul was interested in. Because in his illness, he kept buying the same CDs and DVDs over and over. He had multiple copies of various things, including we had only one copy of Rain Man.
But that was the original one that I gave him.
He gave me a brand new one. But he had six copies of Charlie's Angels, including two copies of the TV series. Mm-hmm. He had every Jane Fonda movie that I could find. He had every Olivia Newton-John film that she was in, including...
He was totally crazy. Grease, that was his favorite movie. Yep, I think he told me, he saw, watched this movie on the internet, he told me.
Oh, yeah.
He watches like each and every night, he watched the Grease. He knew all the songs.
He had Robert Redford, he had John Travolta movies along with Olivia.
Mm.
He had a bunch of Judy Garland stuff.
Yeah, really?
A bunch of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, he was very young after Fitness.
Goldie Hawn, number of Goldie Hawn's movies.
You like his pretty women.
Marx Brothers.
Charlie
Chaplin, there was only one or two. And an incredible collection of TV from the 60s. Our Gang. He actually had some older stuff, like Three Stooges and all the comedy and the Marx Brothers. But he had the complete Ozzie and Harriet.
Seriously?
Like every show there was ever done.
Oh my god.
He had the complete Rocky and Bullwinkle.
those are ageless.
Yeah. I mean it was just an interesting, for me, it was an interesting window into where his that part of his life, what he focused on.
Eric, do you remember his favorite sports figure? It was Bill Russell.
Well,
He said he admired him all of his life because Bill Russell made his own way. He did it himself. And he said he never heard he stayed the same all the time. The boos and the cheers were the same for him.
Do you remember a baseball player called Joe Slobotnik?
No.
Charlie Brown's idol.
Oh, right.
And I think that might have been his favorite. He used to tell me all the time that, because Charlie Brown had this idol, this guy named Joe Slobotnik, and Paul. I'm serious. Paul knew he could tell, just like Charlie Brown could. He had this book that had all this. It was like In Search of Joe Slobotnik, and it was a fictitious. That was a fictitious one.
But
he was a stack of Charlie Brown.
Oh yeah, he was a big fan of Charlie Brown.
Boxes there.
Baseball he loved. When I played with him on Wednesday night. Usually it was the same. I'd have to wake him up, and he'd remind me that Napoleon and the Duke of Wellington always slept before the battles. I reminded him that he hadn't conquered Europe. So sometimes, without even opening his eyes, he'd say, I think you look too tired to play bridge tonight in the summer. I knew what that meant. He had baseball tickets.
He was always a good competitor. I remember, before I knew him very well, when I had only played with him one or two times, I began to realize that he liked to play other things too, because I hadn't really associated with him at the time except at the bridge table. And I went with, this is like 1987 or something, I went with my girlfriend at the time, and we happened to go over to the Wonderland.
Was it Nancy?
No.
No?
We happened to go over to the Wonderland dog track. And Paul used to love to play the dogs. He actually got me interested.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like to bet gross amounts of money. What I really like is I just like to watch them. I just like to watch them run around the track the first turn and wipe each other out and see who survives around the third turn. But anyway, there were two memories that I really remember while we were there. The first is this is before I knew him well. I was with my girlfriend, and I had no idea how to handicap dogs or anything like that. So we were there, and I was looking at the program I have no clue. So we each took $3, and we bet some ticket. I bet a Quinella on 4-6. So sure enough, somehow the 4-6 runs, and it's a big quenelle. It's like a 30-to-1 quenelle, and so I get paid $64 or something like that. And I'm really happy. And my girlfriend's like, "Wee, this is really good. You know, we just made 50, 60 bucks." And so I happened to see Paul right over there, and I kind of wanted to. I had known him enough to know that he would like this. It's a good story to see his friends win. So I go up with him. I introduce him to my girlfriend, and I said, "Paul, look, I have the 60 bucks." I said, "You know, I just, you know, did you have that race? I bet the 4-6." And so he reaches into his pocket and he's like shaking his head and goes, 4-6. I got that three times." he had bet that too three times. About 5 years later, we frequented the track about once every maybe 3 weeks. That used to be just an entertaining thing he and I used to go to, and so now I knew him. And we were at the track, and this ridiculous event happened. I remember Paul was there only because he started talking about this guy that we met afterward. This guy comes up quite drunk, and the guy, a race had just ended. He goes, "Hey, did you two guys," he's talking to Paul and me, "did you two guys bet that five dog over there?" And we're like, "No, couldn't imagine that one winning." And he goes, "Yeah, you know, you should always bet the females when the ground is wet." And like, I'm looking at Paul, and we're like, "Why is that?" And he goes, "Because they can really get their claws into the ground. You know what I'm talking about? The claws into the ground." And then he walks away. And like, Paul and I, that was...
Just look at each other.
I'm like, and for years afterward, if anything came up that was remotely like, all I have to say is, "Paul, it's the claws," and we would be dying. "It's the claws, Paul," and he would just be cracking up. I'll never forget that. "They really get their claws in the ground."
Really,
and
there
was
funny.
Like, we were looking at each other for like 15 seconds.
You know, Paul, when we didn't go to the tournament, it was a weekend. Paul used to take my car each weekend, Saturday and Sunday. He used to take my car, and I said, "Paul, you're going to the track. It's not good." After a while, he said to me, he believed strongly that I'm a witch. Said, "You know, don't ever ask me again if I'm going to the track. Don't ask me. I don't want you to know. Each time you tell me don't go to the track, I lose money. When you don't know anything, I win. Just don't ask me." So he said, "You're a witch." I said, "What? I don't want you to lose. I'm not telling you to lose. I'm just asking you." He said, "Don't ask you. I don't want to give you information. If I go, I'll go. Maybe I'll go. Maybe I won't go. But I strongly believe that I have this power to predict."
It was
loved.
He loved the track.
He used to tell me about the losing.
And stay home.
Yeah, and stay home.
Now we drove down, both of us, you know, we spend the...
It's like 100 miles, too.
Yeah, we
went down there for an hour and a half.
Stormy night.
It's a 100-mile drive each way.
It was stormy night, but we had a good time. We know
right.
We went there.
He was well-respected in the bridge field, too. Very well-respected and very well-liked, too.
He got me to go to the track with him once. It was
really?
Some kind of forfeit, something that I should have done at bridge.
Something else
on a fairly regular basis. He got me to go to the track with him. I said, "Paul, I'm the only one here with teeth."
Could well be true. Do you remember what he used to make at the track? Did you guys ever see? I don't know if anyone ever went to the track. What was his favorite? He used to actually buy something from the concession stand and then mix them together. Do you remember what it was? I don't know if you ever saw that. He took vanilla ice cream and orange juice, and he made a creamsicle?
Yes, like something out of a challenge.
Yeah, and he mixed it together, and it was a
orange
mushy orange creamsicle. That's exactly. He used to do that all the time.
Really? That was part of our challenge.
I remember the first time he did it. He put down the cup with the ice with the soft serve, and he put down this. And I'm sitting there at the track, and I'm like, "No, that's right. I don't want to." "Oh no, these aren't for you." And I said, "Oh." He goes, "I'm going to try an experiment." So he has an empty cup, and he scoops some ice cream out and starts mixing it around. And of course, he wanted to get me to try it. I had no taste for it, but anytime he liked something, he would definitely try to get you to try it. He never liked chicken, though. Remember that?
Oh, no. He
never
liked chicken.
He
was just a pizza, no chicken. Foul. Yeah. That's right. That's a foul burger.
He liked hamburgers.
Hamburgers.
And
yeah,
pizza.
Hot dogs. Fish
pizza.
He didn't really eat.
Pizza.
Once
pizza.
In a while he
pizza
did.
Pizza and hamburger.
Pizza
that's
hamburger,
his food.
Yeah.
Pizza and hamburger.
He knew.
And toast. He liked.
Yeah, peanut butter.
Yeah.
Toast and
peanut
butter.
Peanut
butter. Oh, he was
that's
the world's best
it's
judge
to me,
of peanut butter.
That's all
Skippy
I need. You got a jar of peanut
that's
butter,
it.
You
smooth.
Got toast. I'm happy,
you'd
say.
I
remember when he got
huh?
would eat the whole jar.
Oh,
no, I
of
mean,
course.
In one sitting, he'd just
yeah.
sit in front of the television and eat the whole jar of peanut butter. It's like,
Pinos, you remember Pinos?
Yeah.
That was him
well, that's
that was
pizza.
His, yeah, that's
yeah.
It, that, from Pinos, that's
yeah.
his
yeah.
favorite
yeah.
pizza
yeah.
place.
Do you remember
yeah.
the pickles? He used to keep a jar in the cabinet.
Oh, no, yes, I do. Right.
Do you remember that? The pickle Mott's applesauce only. Right. Always.
There's a lot of it in his apartment.
But I want to say something about the bridge when we played. Once you know the Lynch family, she bought the team. She brought, I don't know if you're not familiar with the names, but she bought the top players in United States, maybe in the world, to come and to play with her on the team to New England. We were just thrilled. It was Bob Hammond and Paul Soloway. And Mike Lawrence and Sutherland, and she played with Carolyn Lynch played with her partner, which is Dennis Dawson. This team was like top team, and we've had our team.
What is Dennis Dawson?
She's playing with Dennis Dawson. That's your pro. Yeah, that's
yeah,
a different
that's
story.
Problem.
That's a different story. That's it.
They're only
that,
one
that's
third
right.
of the team. They
that's right.
Play.
Okay, so she can play with him because she has the other four guys,
okay.
right? So this team came to play in New England. And we were there, we were playing all the New England regionals, Paul and I, and Dan, and Dan and John. And some of the team, I think we had six. We had Richie and Jay Stiefel, I think. Anyway, we played against this team, the whole tournament, the whole regional, six times. That's a pretty good team. Six times. Isn't that like three-way?
I remember he told me about
three-way.
That.
We played the three-way. We played them in the semifinals, playing in the finals, in the team game. We beat this team three times, and they beat us three times.
Wow.
That
wow.
was pretty good.
Yes,
he was like so proud of that. Unbelievable.
Sure, I remember
but
he
one
told
round,
me
we
about
played,
that.
We played in the finals. Caroline, the client was out, and we played, we came, Paul and I played in played in the second half because we were 6-man team, and we were like down by five, and we sat in and played for the second half for 14 boards against Bob Hammond and Paul Soloway, and I was like so nervous because you have to understand that's like the two names in the top of the bridge in the world that you're playing against these people. You don't get to play against them so many times because they play only like really the big tournaments, and I was like so nervous, and like Paul sits just across me, and we sit there, and we cannot touch our own card. We just double dummy against these people, and we crushed them. We beat them like by 25, this team. And that, I think, he was like so happy, and he was like so proud of that. It was like so great.
He had a success.
Yeah, and the other thing we did was we played in the Springboard. Again, the same thing. Where is Dan? He left. Dan and John, he probably went to smoke. He went to smoke.
No,
so that's the team.
To tell about what happened.
Yeah, right. We played in the Spingold this third round. And we're playing against the team that won the Spingold this year, end up Spingold, which was Alan, what's his name? Rose Meltzer played with Kyle, what's his name?
Larson.
Kyle Larson and Weixel played with Zontag and. They was 6-man team.
It's the best national event ever.
So we played against them the third round, this team. And if you're playing 64 boards, it's three quarters, 16, 16, 16, and 16. So after the first 16 boards, we're leading by 32. After the 32 boards, we're leading by 16.
Uh-huh.
After third quarter, we're leading only by four.
Oh.
So the fourth quarter, we're playing, and we're like nobody, like we're dropping a little bit, but we're still hanging in there. And we're playing the fourth quarter, and we're like nobody. We came in, and suddenly we're playing the fourth quarter. I look up, and I was like so intense. I'm playing this quarter, and I look up, and maybe 50 people standing around and watching
because
we're still beating up on this. Yeah,
it's like the ad on the TV. You see that the two people play chess and all these people
right.
are everybody's like over the table looking at them
because
playing.
People just came from nowhere and we're beating all the team, which like top players there. And I looked up and I said, I don't believe that. I shouldn't look that. It's like too many people there. And we're sitting there and we're playing and I don't know. We just holding on whatever happened.
Paul told me that about that. This starts
the end of the story.
She, you know what he said? He didn't talk about how well he played. He talked about how well Sheila played.
Well, because Paul always played well, so it's well up to me. He never makes mistakes. If I was screwed up, then I was screwed up. He never.
You asked him the number of mistakes he'd admit to was about maybe 2 per year.
Yeah, he maybe made more than that,
maybe,
but he rarely made a mistake, you know. So it's basically he made mistakes, but not really so many.
No,
like it's basically this level. So we're going back and we're comparing, and there was like, well, I have to tell this story to the bridge players.
Wait for them.
To the bridge players,
so
I have to tell the story.
So.
No, I don't want to the bridge story. Everything. This was one board that our opponents got to 4 spades. Through the auction invitational to slam and to be hired, but they invited and they stopped. And our teammates had the same auction. They invited and they stopped. Only then, where is he? I have to get it. Only the person that invited decided that he got one more step and he accepted his own invitation and he beat the slam.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost by 10. So if he only would beat the game, we would have won because we were up by 4. We wouldn't win, and we would, who knows, probably would lose the next round. But we basically were beating up on this team till the very end. It all came down to the last blow.
Should that slam have been bid? No.
By the way, double gummy, you can make the slam. If you see all the hands, you can
Dan.
Make the slam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just told the story.
Say,
nice smoke.
The say
how
story.
Good you play this slam
the
in a spingle.
Story.
Paul was there earlier. We're talking about how many regionals we won, and I then said we'd have won 50 more if I wasn't on the team.
That's not true.
But I have one Paul story I'd like to tell, a different side of Paul. And, this is 4.5 years ago. And I got to give up smoking. I'm out of breath.
Yeah, you are.
It's funny. Paul said the same thing about 10 years ago.
But he gave it up.
Yeah.
And Nikki came down with lung cancer. And she had 4 tumors in her brain. And she had a spot in her lung. And I don't know if Paul ever came over to me and said anything about it, because he was very quiet and you never knew exactly what he was thinking or so forth. So Nikki was going through chemo and radiation, but she still had the 4 tumors in her head. And Paul somewhere had read this article that he cut out and gave to me on laser surgery. Wow, very interesting. And I think, as far as I can remember, that was the first acknowledgement to me that he knew that Nick even had a problem. So I brought it to her doctor over at the Brigham Women's Hospital. And the other, I guess she was an oncologist. And she obviously wasn't very familiar with this laser surgery at all. But she took it. And a few days later, she said, you know, I think Nikki is a perfect candidate because she's responded well to the chemo and the radiation. And we'd like to try the laser surgery. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. You know, I think you're a doctor, you may know about it. And there were like 3 physicists that worked. She went in like 6 o'clock in the morning and put a halo around her head and screwed it into the thing, and she was there like 13 hours. And these 3 physicists, you know, did all the coordinates, and then some guy in a suit came in on this table that went up and down around and so forth. And they did remove the 4 tumors with this laser surgery. Unfortunately, she developed cancer in other areas of her body, and, you know, she died within 5 months of it. But it really impressed me that, you know, Paul, even though he didn't say a word, obviously it was on his mind, and when he ran across something, he was very quick to cut it out and deal with me.
He'd never come out and admit it,
right.
Straight forward, but he would always find ways.
Ways to show
he
you
cared.
That
he's always cared. Always cared about everybody.
Paul had a sort of a real kind heart and a very, very dry sense of humor. I was playing with him in the round of 16 at a Vandals. We were playing in Chagas and Branko. Now, Paul was a very solid bridge player. I was a little bit crazy, you know. So, but at this particular time, he decided to be a little bit crazy. So I'm in this contract, and I'm looking at this terrible diamond. hands of it. I just don't know what to do. I look up, and instead of Paul turning the dummy, it's Paul is standing behind me, and he's combing my hair. he says, "You're making it obvious you're in trouble. This will make you play better." He sort of had a way of defusing.
Yeah. But he loved to tell jokes. That's I don't know if you know. He just loved to tell jokes.
Sheila.
He what?
Not all of them.
Very bad jokes. Though, sometimes
but some
come
of them
up
were so bad that they were designed to be
I
so
know.
Bad, and that was
what
the whole
thing. I was telling him, Paul, that's like horrible. I said, well, if you're not laughing, other people are laughing. I said, no, they're laughing because they want to be nice to you. I'm telling you the truth. They don't. This, it's horrible
they
jokes.
Tried every one of them out on me. Every time he saw
he
me,
loved to tell
I got a joke. I got a joke every time I saw him.
So there's this guy on the club, Billy McMahon. I don't know if you...
Oh, I know Billy. Yeah.
Okay. Every time he'd come in the club, he'd have a new joke. And every time he told a joke, it was like, that was the worst joke you've ever heard.
Yeah.
Right? But if that wasn't bad enough, a couple of weeks later,
Paul
would
tell the same joke. Yeah. Same joke. He used to get a lot of jokes from Billy.
I heard this great joke. Yeah.
I used to tell them to him when I heard them. And of course, teaching in the inner city, I heard a lot of things. And I used to tell them to him. And as I was telling him the joke, he'd say, I can rework it. Say I can rework it, but he did have this way of, about a year and a half ago he thought I ought to lose some weight, and he didn't suggest it in the way somebody else might have done. He said, have you looked in the mirror lately? And I said, nobody ever accused me of not looking in a mirror, Paul. He said, I meant more like upstairs. I said, upstairs? He said, you know, like upstairs is where you could lose some weight. You know, he said, like, upstairs? He said, you haven't noticed? I said, no, I haven't noticed. He said, well, the two guys at the table did tonight. That's why you made that contract. Upstairs.
Hey, I was playing chess. Don't laugh. When I used to play chess when I was young, I was when I won the championship when I was 16, I played in at the U.S. Open, and in the third round, I played this girl who was local from New Jersey where I lived, and I knew her very well. She was like 17 years old, and I was 16. And she came. We know the night before who you're going to be playing the next day because it gets paired up on the wall. So she comes in, and she's wearing this, like, really short skirt and the shirt that comes down to here. And here I am, a 16-year-old guy, and I'm like, oh, God.
Lisa Lane, right?
No. Her name was Christy. It doesn't matter. Christy Ferrazzo. But, I mean, just...
Don't let these guys kid you. Let me tell you. They'd be at a bridge. They'd be at a tournament. They're playing competitive bridge. Sure. They're sitting down real serious, okay? If a girl walked naked through that room, they would not.
Wouldn't
that's not true.
That's not true.
I was playing with Paul in Canada, and we were playing a hand, and he was playing. He was the clear. He was playing a hand. He stopped, and he says, wow, did you see that?
But he says it like 20 seconds after. He's like thinking about it, and he's right. And he's like, then he goes like this, and he goes,
did
you see that? And I'm like, what? The girl who walked by, I'm like, look around. There's a huge room, right? No one's standing up. No one could have walked by the last 15 seconds. I'm looking around like, what? And he goes, well, a couple of minutes ago, that girl walked by. You get focused into it. It doesn't process.
I rarely played with Paul, but I often played on teams with him. And I was thinking, what are some of the things? And things are coming back. And actually, that was one of them. It was the one time I saw him almost fall on the floor laughing when we came back to the table. Because what I'd done is there's this girl named Brigitte. I think that was her name. Anyway, she wore low tops, and she made a Michael's Cupid, and I asked her if it was topless, and everybody at the table just lost it. They were like, so it took like 10 minutes to get back to them. And then when I recounted the story, Paul just like fell out of his chair.
You know, it's funny. He had two interesting sides at the bridge table. There was the competitive side that wanted to win, and that wouldn't take any nonsense. And I'll tell you a story about that. And then there was the lighthearted side, because at the bridge table, some things can happen, especially in team games when you go back to compare. Things that you cannot imagine are possible. So,
Let's start on board nine.
Yeah, he always said start
this
on board
nine. This was one of his favorite things
right.
to do.
So we had. I was playing at the club in Framingham, club game with him on a Thursday night, and he psychs one spade. This is like a psych with Paul. It happens once. He psyched three times when I played with him.
Oh really? Wow.
In thousands of boards.
It was like I don't know, 13 years.
What do you say?
He psyched three times.
Okay, for
he opens the bidding white on red. He opens one spade.
What, zero count?
Okay, and it goes past to me, and I'm looking at a 5-card spade suit and a fairly and an outside ace, and a singleton. So I just bid four spades. I just like all right, let me just bid four spades.
The Punisher.
Yeah. So it goes one spade, pass. Four spades. And it goes double over here. I had... I had five. It goes one spade, pass four spades, it goes double. And he passes. And his right hand, the lady on my right, starts thinking about what to bid.
That's the right
thing. Right. And I'm saying to myself, well, you know, I hope they go to the five level. I have an ace. I got a shot. But I mean, if they pass four spades, that's not the end of the world. I figure I got them covered. So she finally bids five of my ace suit, which I actually have ace 10-3rd. And it goes five. It was clubs. Five clubs. And it goes pass, pass, pass. And so I'm on lead. And I come out with the lead. And they make five clubs easily. but they get a bad score because you can make... You can make three no trump. You can make
four,
six of anything. Paul has no high cards at all, and I have an ace. I mean, they can make 12 tricks.
He did this in first seat.
Oh yeah, but the beautiful thing is the beautiful thing is. So they realize they just got a bad score, and so the lady who bid five clubs, she's playing the hand, and she the dummy comes down, and she's like, "Holy crap, I can't!" And she bids like six, and so she calls the director and says, "I don't think that this." This bidding is quite correct. And Paul's like looking at her. Now, Paul knows that I know, because I saw what came out of her hand, okay? Check this out. You ready what was in this lady's hand when she bid five clubs? She had five clubs to the jack, a stiff heart, three diamonds, and I kid you not, ace, king, queen, jack of spades.
And she didn't.
Did she pull
it? It was four spades double to her. She had ace, king, queen, jack of spades, and jack fifth of clubs.
Oh my
so
god.
So she pulls the five.
Take out
of yeah, oh yeah.
So she's calling the director, and the director was Marty at the time, and Marty's, you know, and goes, "Paul, what do you have to say for yourself?"